This is Christopher O'Reilly, and after 17 years of From the Top, we could do a whole new NPR series about our 20-something alums. Hundreds of them are out there making a difference in the music world. So finding just 5 From the Toppers to feature on our annual Where Are They Now show isn't exactly a problem. And these shows always amaze me because they show the passage of time, and I love the chance to dig into the riches of From the Top's network. Enjoy meeting just 5 of our superb alumni right now on this podcast.
From NPR.
It's From the Top.
Celebrating the power of music.
In the hands of America's kids.
Here's our host, concert pianist Christopher O'Reilly.
Welcome, everybody. This week, we leave the concert hall and take a visit to the From the Top archives. It's another one of our Where Are They Now shows. We meet such outstanding teenage players every week that it's only natural to wonder what these kids are doing now that they're in their 20s and early 30s. So today, we're going to hear again from 5 From the Top alums who've gone on to do some amazing things. 2 of them are playing in American orchestras, 2 are concertizing soloists with impressive careers, and 1 is a composer with so many awards and accolades that, well, your head will spin. Plus, this is the Love Boat edition of From the Top. We'll hear 2 pretty fantastic love stories involving some of our alums, like this one up first. But before we hear the story, we're going to hear 1/2 of this romance perform. This is the Toccata from Maurice Ravel's Le Tombeau de Couperin. The pianist is Peter Dugan, who was on our show when he was 18 years old in 2007. This recording is from his new CD with fellow From the Top alum John Brancy, called A Silent Night, a World War I memorial in song.
Thank you.
That was Peter Dugan performing the toccata from Maurice Ravel's Le Tombeau de Couperin. Peter is an alum of From the Top, and we're featuring him on this Where Are They Now special. Peter, you're off to a great start now with your career as a concertizing pianist, but you say you're having to deal with a music business that likes to pigeonhole performers, and that that doesn't reflect your wide-ranging musical appetite. Talk about all of the various things you're doing as a pianist these days.
Yeah, so for as long as I've been playing piano, variety has always had a huge appeal for me. And I've always loved to play jazz, blues, chamber music, pop, originals, and I also love working with singers.
Oh, well, actually, speaking of singers, you have one sitting next to you right now. Would you introduce her?
Yeah, next to me is my lovely bride, Kara Dugan, one of the great mezzo-sopranos.
Hello.
Hi, Kara. Kara is also an alum of From the Top, and you guys are married?
That's right. We've been married for almost a year and a half now.
My gosh, we're going to have to do like the newlywed game From the Top style at some point, obviously. Kara, how did you two meet?
Well, I first met Peter actually the first semester of my time at Juilliard. We met in Italian class, and it just so happened we sat next to each other on the first day of class, and you know how that goes. Those stay your seats for the rest of the year. So we ended up being partners in Italian class and getting to know each other in Italian, which was kind of a cool way to get to know my future husband.
The language of love.
That's right.
Exactly. You guys, there's this wonderful story about your wedding and pianos.
Yes.
Where were you guys married, first of all? That's extraordinarily exciting. And Kara, I believe this has to do with your birth origins.
That's right. Peter and I got married in May of 2016 in my hometown of Temecula, California, which is a sort of small tucked away wine region in between San Diego and Los Angeles. And I just thought it would, you know, we were looking around at so many venues, and we got to a winery nearby called Wilson Creek Winery, and it seemed like the perfect spot. It had this beautiful outdoor sort of area in the vines where you could have your ceremony, and so we chose to do that.
So when the wedding coordinator was showing us this spot in the middle of the vines on the top of a hill, which was very picturesque, I asked him, have you ever had a piano here? And he kind of laughed because it's all this wood chip and dirt path. And he said, no, we haven't. And I said, I think we'll probably find a way to change that and get a piano here. And it just so happened that right around that time, I was talking a lot with Yamaha Artist Services, and I became a Yamaha artist right around that time. And so we were able to work together with Yamaha, and ultimately, yeah, we had a piano right in the middle of the vineyard, and it was pretty awesome.
Well, I think it's time to hear Kara sing. With Peter at the piano, Kara, would you introduce this and tell our listeners why this is a particularly appropriate piece to play, since we just heard about your falling in love?
Of course, yes. This piece is titled Er der Helligste von Allen by Robert Schumann, and the title translates to He the Most Glorious of All. And it goes on to talk about how this woman has this love for this man, and she can't believe that they're together, and she is excited to be with him forever and is so, so happy that they chose each other. Und
Kara Dugan, with her husband Peter Dugan at the piano, sang Er der Herrlichste von Allen by Robert Schumann from Frauenliebe und Leben. What a beautiful piece, and what an appropriate paean to your wonderful relationship. You two had the ultimate double debut recently with the San Francisco Symphony. Peter, you want to start that story?
Sure. We had one of the most exciting performances of our lives, both on the same night, which was really cool. Kara was performing an original composition by Michael Tilson Thomas with the San Francisco Symphony, which called for three singers. And I was performing a jazz symphony by George Antheil in a production which was staged with dancers and projections. We had both previously performed these works with Michael Tilson Thomas and the New World Symphony, but on different concerts before we were married and before our last names were the giveaway. So when the orchestra hired us to both go out and perform these two different pieces on one program with the symphony, they didn't even realize the connection there, that we were married. So just by chance, we got to each give our San Francisco Symphony debut on the same night.
I figure at some point it was good to let the San Francisco Symphony know about your marriage. I mean, because Kara, you know, what if they had put you in like separate hotel rooms?
We did get that email, you know, informing us that they were about to book our flights and hotel rooms. And we thought that was probably an appropriate time to let them know that we would like to be staying together. And we were lucky enough to even get to share a dressing room, which I thought was a really, really special touch to, you know, these exciting performances, getting to share a dressing room with my husband and get prepared for these big concerts that were so exciting.
Well, I was just going to ask, because that really is a relationship milestone, sharing a dressing room at your mutual debut of the San Francisco Symphony. So how did that go? How was the vibe backstage?
Well, we had the tails hanging up in the closet right next to the gold dress. We sort of had an arrangement because Kara's piece was on the first half that up until she went on stage, the focus would be on her getting ready and she would get to use the piano to do her warm-ups. And then once she came back, brief celebration, and then right on to me kind of getting in the zone. And so it worked out, you know, really well, and it was really exciting.
Peter, Kara, thanks so much for joining me, and the best of luck in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Great to be here.
Mezzo-soprano Kara Dugan and her now husband, Peter Dugan.
Kara and Peter are not only a wonderful married couple, they perform together all the time. Check out Kara singing Gershwin's classic Embraceable You with Peter at the piano on our podcast at fromthetop.org. Over the last 10 years, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation have awarded over $2.5 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need. We still have more to give. Go to fromthetop.org to learn more.
Next up, let's meet one of our alums who's now in a major American orchestra, the Boston Symphony, no less. This is violist Leah Ferguson, who first appeared on our show in 2010. She's joined here by two other From the Top alums, violinist Eunice Kim and cellist Oliver Aldort, in the Romanza movement from the Serenade in C for String Trio by Ernst von Dohnányi.
Thank you.
Violist Leah Ferguson, along with violinist Eunice Kim and cellist Oliver Altdort, in the second movement, Romanza, from the Serenade in C for a string trio by Ernst von Dohnányi. Leah, talk us through your studies after you were on From the Top.
So after I was on From the Top, I went to the Cleveland Institute of Music for my undergrad. And then after that, I got a graduate diploma from the Juilliard School.
Who were you studying with at Cleveland?
I was studying with Robert Vernon, and at Juilliard I was with Heidi Castleman and Cynthia Phelps.
Oh, fantastic. I know it must have been incredible going every week to hear the Cleveland Orchestra and actually see your teacher in action. And I'm imagining with those teachers you were destined almost for a life in an orchestra, but something amazing happened when you made it to the final round of your auditions for the Boston Symphony, something that, as you say, never happens. What am I talking about?
Yeah, so in the final round, there were three of us left, and it was the end of a two-day process. So when we finally got there, it was about 8 hours in for that day. So there were three of us left, and they had advertised for one spot. And then the personnel manager came in and told us that actually they had four spots available and that they wanted to offer all three of us a job, which, if you know auditions very well, that never, ever happens.
No.
At all. So it was really exciting.
Testament to the star quality on offer.
And it was kind of instantly bonding, I guess, for the three of us. And we all went out afterwards with some members of the section and celebrated. And it was a really fun experience. And everybody, you know, won. So it was a really positive vibe. And then we got to go up on stage and meet the music director of the BSO, Andres Nelsons, and the rest of the committee. And everybody was just so happy. It was a really amazing day for everybody.
And at 24 now, you are the youngest member of the Boston Symphony?
Almost. My friend Oliver Altdort beat me by a few months, so he's the youngest. Yeah, but
another From the Top friend.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. How's life in the orchestra treating you? What are you up to these days?
It's been really great. It's been really fun. Everyone's so nice and very welcoming. So I'm just kind of getting myself established in Boston. Playing some chamber music here and there, and then learning all of these pieces. There's a lot of repertoire to learn all the time because most of it's new to me.
I was wondering about that. Now that you have this fantastic job with one of the world's greatest orchestras, that might be your biggest musical challenge, you know, just covering all of this repertoire, eh?
Yeah, it was really overwhelming last year. Sometimes it would just feel like I would go home and I didn't feel like I had time to do anything but just learn orchestral pieces because there were just stacks and stacks of things that I needed to know and have really well learned. So it was overwhelming at first, but it's gotten a lot easier over time. And now it doesn't, you know, I can kind of go in and feel like I know sort of what I'm doing more.
Oh, I'm sure. I have no doubt.
Yeah.
Well, you're living the life and the life within the life. I know the orchestra just got back from a Japanese tour, and that sounded fantastic. And I know it was your first trip to the Far East. So just such exciting things, Leah, and so great to touch base with you again. And here, of course, all of our From the Top friends in performance again. We wish you all the best of luck.
Thank you.
From the Top alum, Leah Ferguson, now a member of the Boston Symphony Orchestra.
Today's show may be halfway over, but your From the Top experience doesn't have to end here. Sign up for our mailing list to keep in touch with all things From the Top. We'll send you all the latest news, plus let you know when we're coming to a town near you. Sign up at fromthetop.org.
Support for NPR comes from this station. And from the Howard and Geraldine Pollinger Family Foundation, committed to nurturing the development of talented emerging artists and sharing the joy that the performing arts bring to life. From the Volgenau Foundation, supporting programs that conserve natural resources, educate children, and promote classical music. From the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, providing scholarships to high-achieving students with financial need. And from Americans for the Arts. Thank you.
Christopher O'Reilly back with our special Where Are They Now edition of From the Top. We're hearing from some of our alums who've gone on to do great things in the classical music world. Now, let's meet the composer I mentioned at the top of the show. Eric Nathan is now an assistant professor at Brown University. Last year, he won both the Rome and Guggenheim prizes, and speaking of prizes, he's been honored with the ASCAP Morton Gould Award, the BMI William Schumann Prize, and the Leonard Bernstein Fellowship from the Tanglewood Music Center. His new commission for violinist Jennifer Coe is being premiered this season. Here's a bit of a very early composition for trumpet he played on From the Top 17 years ago. Eric Nathan composed and performed his Proclamation for Trumpet and Piano when he was 17, back in 2001. Eric, I guess that performance on From the Top marked a couple of firsts for you, yes?
Yes, indeed. I do think of this work as my Opus 1 composition. It was the first work I composed studying composition with a composition teacher, Ira Taxon, and it was also the first to be performed professionally by you on piano, myself on trumpet, and on the radio. And it was really a thrilling experience and gave me the confidence to see that I could really be a composer.
Then, Eric, at Yale, you decided that you wanted to focus on composing instead of playing. How did that come about?
I decided to focus on composing as I progressed through my time there, where I was performing as a trumpet player quite a bit. I was in about five or six different ensembles and rehearsing continuously, but I realized I really didn't enjoy practicing. And to be a real professional performer, I really needed to have enough time practicing to get better. But I found that I could compose all day long. And so that showed me where my true interests lied. And so I felt that was a good path forward.
Absolutely. Well, you've gone on to be quite an accomplished and acclaimed composer. We're going to hear a wonderful, fairly recent string quintet of yours in a few minutes. But let's touch on some of the other pieces you've composed recently. Under a commission from the New York Philharmonic, you wrote a solo trombone piece for Joseph Alessi, the orchestra's principal trombonist. But that was music for trombone missing a part? Explain that to us.
Yes, so it's one in a series of works where I've written a solo piece for a solo performer that I've conceived of as a duet for that performer. So I had an earlier trumpet piece where I have in one movement, the trumpet player removed one of their valve slides. And here on the trombone piece, I bought a trombone on Italian eBay and taught myself how to play it, and so that I could test and see what notes came out of the trombone when I removed the F attachment tuning slide. So what that means is when the trombonist presses it down a valve, the sound would normally go through this other slide, but when it's removed, it just shoots out the back of the trombone and makes a kind of muted, tinny sound that's slightly out of tune as well.
Is this sort of a multiphonic effect? I mean, sort of like Ian Anderson's flute in Jethro Tull?
You can't actually play more than one pitch at a time, so it creates a dialogue where you can actually project sound normally through the trombone out the bell, but when you press down this valve, and since there's no tuning slide there, it projects the sound backwards out the trombone. So you get an antiphonal instrument that has two very different sounds. I put it in dialogue with each other as two characters that were in a duet that could trade voices lightning fast between each other.
It's a wonderful, wonderful image. I really love this idea. And you mentioned in passing you're buying a trombone on Italian eBay. Don't be modest. You know, what were you doing in Italy?
I was there for a year as a composer on a Rome Prize fellowship in composition, where I spent 11 months composing a number of different works and living at the American Academy in Rome, which is a interdisciplinary community of various artists and scholars who are all there to focus on their work but also engage with one another.
Well, I love the experimental nature, particularly of the trombone piece, and it reminds me that you take great inspiration from situations, and I know several of your compositions have been inspired by architecture, including one you wrote for the Boston Symphony.
Indeed, yeah, I began composing after graduating from college, when I started studying composition full-time as a master's student, inspired by artworks. This visual influence changed over the years from being more directly tied to conveying textures or the structure of a visual artwork, such as a painting, to being inspired more by the emotions and the feelings and the thoughts and philosophical ideas that arose from me engaging with things in my life and coming to more physical experiences. So I've had a number of works now inspired by old places, and one of these was the Providence Athenaeum, which is a beautiful library built in the 1800s that made me at once very inspired and took my breath away when I walked in, because the sight of all these books brightly illuminated was very startling, but also it got me to think about the past and who had come before me and kind of my place in history.
I said that we were going to hear a string quintet of yours inspired by the music of another composer, Gesualdo, from the late 16th century. Would you introduce it and tell us a little bit about the composition?
Yeah, this piece is entitled Omaggio a Gesualdo, an homage to Gesualdo. And it was commissioned by the Chelsea Music Festival and artistic directors Ken David Mazur and Melinda Lee Mazur, who commissioned this work to commemorate the 400th anniversary of Carlo Gesualdo's death in 2013. So this piece was supposed to be premiered on a concert featuring Gesualdo's vocal madrigals. And so my work responded to one of his madrigals, Ai Disperata Vita, and pays homage to it by mapping my piece on top of the structure of his, but refracting his motives through my own musical language and expanding upon each section, kind of taking it where my inspiration led me. The work changed over the course of the composition as my aunt passed away unexpectedly in the middle, so it became more of a memorial composition. And at the very end, you hear a quote from Gesualdo's madrigal, where I have this very high string harmonic that's kind of glistening that I felt represented the light that's referenced in the Italian text that you don't hear in my music because it's all for string instruments, but I'm referencing this light that's comforting us at the end when we hear this lamenting tune enter.
Let's hear this powerful piece. Thank you. Eric Nathan's Omaggio a Gesualdo. The violinists were Emily Ann Gendron and Ada Cridler. The violists were Stephanie Griffin and the great Samuel Rhodes. And the cellist was Michael Haas.
Podcasts of From the Top, featuring bonus content not heard on the radio broadcast, are available every week at fromthetop.org.
I mentioned that in addition to being our annual Where Are They Now show, this is the Love Boat edition of From the Top. We started out with the love story of Kara and Peter Dugan, both alums who fell in love in their Italian class at Juilliard. Now let's hear the love story of Elizabeth Cook Tachone, who was on our show at the age of 17 in 2003. But first, let's hear her fantastic oboe playing as principal in the Atlanta Symphony in the Vivace from the Quintet for Oboe and String Quartet by Arthur Bliss.
Thank you.
The Vivace from the Quintet for Oboe and String Quartet by Arthur Bliss. Elizabeth Tishone, our From the Top alum, who's now principal oboe with the Atlanta Symphony, was at the helm with violinists Stephen Copes and Stefan Hirsch, violist Philip Yang, and cellist Pyon Tsang. After From the Top, Elizabeth went on to the Great Curtis Institute and studied with Robert Woodhams. But amazingly, she left before she graduated. I asked her about that. Did she really leave the conservatory of her dreams?
I did. I guess I'm a dropout. I won my position in the Atlanta Symphony during my third year of study at the Curtis Institute of Music.
That's incredible.
And, you know, I talked to my now colleagues in the Atlanta Symphony, and I talked to Mr. Woodhams, and I said, should I finish and not take this, or should I take it? And everyone said, no, like, this is a job that you want to take, and
these positions,
and this is what you're going to school for.
These positions are what you're going to school for, but they may not be there by the time you graduate.
Right, right.
You know, they're a very limited number. I just can't believe the story of your audition and the night before your audition. They're just so great.
Oh.
First of all, you'd been playing with the Atlanta Symphony from time to time. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I guess it was 2006. I got called a few times to sub with the Atlanta Symphony because they were without a principal oboist that season. So the night before my audition, I knew a bunch of people in the orchestra at that point, and I decided, you know, I'm pretty nervous, and I want to forget about this audition for a while. So they had a concert that night, and I decided I was going to go to the concert. And I brought my oboe because I had talked to the personnel manager and asked if I could just play a few notes in the hall after the concert, after everyone left, just to kind of, like, calm my nerves and visualize and experience maybe what it would sound like the next morning. So I had my oboe with me, and the first half of the concert, I guess the second oboist, maybe she had some reaction to some medication, and she was falling asleep on stage, and it was a big problem, obviously. She wasn't able to go on stage for the second half, and so people knew I was in the audience, and they found me, and the personnel manager came running out and said, oh my gosh, can you play the second half? And I was like, what? This is like stuff of movies, you know,
mm-hmm,
or like
exactly.
Nightmares, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, yeah, I can. And so, you know, I get on stage. The second half is Copland's Third Symphony.
Wow.
And I'm on stage sight reading Copland's Third. I had never heard the piece before.
You'd never heard it, much less played it before?
I had never played it. I had never heard it.
So now we have gone from movies to nightmares, I think, officially, right?
Yeah. You know, it actually went really well, I think. I mean, I didn't crash and burn, and I didn't cause the orchestra to crash and burn, and everyone was happy. It was actually a really good thing to have happen, because the next morning, my audition was with the orchestra. So all of the excerpts, the big, amazing oboe solos, of, you know, I played them in the orchestra, which I think is a really good way to have an audition.
Yeah.
But I had sat in the orchestra the night before, and it didn't feel so scary, you know.
Well, with such a ninth inning, you know, grand slam experience is that it's no surprise you ended up, what, at the age of, what, 21, you were with the Atlanta Symphony?
I got the job when I was 21.
And as the youngest member of the orchestra, I gather you had a good relationship with, I guess, maybe the second youngest member of the orchestra. Tell us about that.
The second youngest member of the orchestra at that time was Mike Tishone, and he plays the trumpet. And he ended up winning a job with the San Francisco Symphony. And, you know, it kind of made me realize, like, wow, I think I'm going to really miss him, you know. Like, I think I might really like him. And
It was one particular phone call, I think. It was actually when you were congratulating him about the new job.
I did. I told him, you know, I'm really happy for you, but I'm kind of sad. Like, I'm going to really miss you. And he realized, oh, maybe I think she likes me. and we ended up going out and hit it off, and we've been together ever since. And he ended up coming back from San Francisco because Atlanta kept his job for a season. And he turned down the San Francisco Symphony to come back and be together.
Wait a minute. He had a job at the San Francisco Symphony, and I gather he was in San Francisco for a bit, correct?
Yeah, he was there for a season.
At Davies Hall under Michael Tilson Thomas, and he came back to Atlanta to be with you. I got to say, that is true love.
Yes, yes. He's a great guy.
And I take it Michael is somewhat of a joker. Tell our listeners about his challenge to you in Beethoven's Fifth Symphony.
Okay. I still can't believe I did this. I already had tenure, so if I didn't have tenure, maybe this wouldn't have happened. But we were playing Beethoven 5, and there's this oboe cadenza in the first movement that's written out. Mm-hmm. And we were playing under Ali Nussen, who is a wonderful guy, but looks really scary. Okay. and we went out to lunch, and he dared me. This is in between rehearsals, and he said, "I dare you to just like make up a new cadenza for the Beethoven." And I was like, "Okay, you know, I wanted to impress him." And then I like kind of realized, like, "Oh my God, what did I just say I'd do?" So I, you know, tune the orchestra. We get to the cadenza, and I make up this cadenza that's like, I don't know, it had all these arpeggios and trills and, like, you know, like, ridiculous stuff. And Ali Nussen's up there, like, looking at me like, what? What are you doing? And then the whole orchestra is, like, laughing and shuffling, you know. And then he just goes on. You know, he doesn't stop. He just, after I'm done, which my heart is pounding and my hands are shaking and, like, and okay, so I did it. I impressed my future husband, yay. But, like, so it's done. He just doesn't say anything about it, and he just continues with rehearsal and acts like it was supposed to be that way. And I was like, wow, I think I got away with this, you know? This is a weird feeling. And so then the concert the next night, we get to the cadenza, and obviously I play what's written, you know, but he decides that the last note should last, like, he just, like, held it out, so I'm playing this D and, like, looking at him for this cutoff, and he's just not giving it to me. He was definitely getting me back, like, like, 100%.
Elizabeth, it's such a pleasure to reconnect with you and to hear your wonderful playing again. But also just an extraordinary and unique pleasure speaking to you, so playful at the highest ends of musical achievement, and how fate and love have played such a wonderful and joyous part of your life. Thank you for sharing that with us, Elizabeth, and we wish you all the best of luck.
Thank you so much.
Elizabeth Cook Tishone, an alum of From the Top, now principal oboe with the Atlanta Symphony. Let's go out with more of the Serenade in C for String Trio by Ernst von Dohnányi. Again, these are all From the Top alums, Eunice Kim, Leah Ferguson, and Oliver Aldort. This is the Rondo Movement. And this is Christopher O'Reilly. Join me next week, why don't you, when we take it from the top.
This special edition of From the Top was written and produced by Tom Vagley with Tim Banker and Matt Dykeman. The executive producers are Gerald Slavin and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. Our home is New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music. If you'd like to appear in our program, apply online at fromthetop.org. From the Top is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts. On the web at arts.gov.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from the National Endowment for the Arts, the federal agency that supports the arts and creativity in communities across the nation. More information is available at arts.gov. From the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide to address inequality in all its forms. Learn more at fordfoundation.org. And from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age.
This is Christopher O'Reilly, and I hope you had fun listening to this week's podcast. As you might imagine, making From the Top happen week after week costs quite a bit of dough. If you believe in what we do, we really need you to help us out. Make a contribution of any size at fromthetop.org. And now a little bonus for you downloading my complete break piece for this show, which was Mozart's Gigue in G, K574.